Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. Gender transition of minors has been adopted as normal, even a right for children to pursue. Parental rights have taken a back seat to their child's perceived gender identity, and many institutions are increasingly siding with the child over their parents. California has recently become a sanctuary state for minors who are suffering from gender dysphoria. So what are we to make of this? And what's a parent to do in a culture hostile to their rights and to the truth? To talk further about this is Dr. Miriam Grossman. Dr. Grossman is a board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. She's a medical doctor, and she's also the author of 5 books. Her latest is called Lost in Transnation, A Child Psychiatrist's Guide Out of the Madness. And Dr. Grossman also appeared on Matt Walsh's documentary, What is a Woman? Dr. Grossman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Richard. Great to be here.
Hey, before we began, I mentioned to you that I'm going through your book, and I thought I'd have it finished by now. I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and I'm going to be very frank and blunt. I'm alarmed at several of the things that I'm reading here. I consider myself somebody who's well-versed in issues of gender ideology and what's going on with the gender identity movement. And you share some things in your book that are enlightening, but downright disturbing as to what's happened in the medical community, what's happened as far as public policy, and where the cultural tide is moving regarding gender identity, specifically with children. There's a lot that we could talk about, but really I want to key in on what's going on in the medical profession. Many of our listeners and viewers know that the Commonwealth Policy Center took a lead in Senate Bill 150 last year. That's a bill in the state legislature that pushed against gender ideology in public schools. It also protected minors with gender dysphoria from pursuing hormone therapy, puberty blockers, or gender transition surgeries. So Kentucky's in a good place as far as protecting children. But Dr. Grossman, one of the most challenging things we faced in the committee meetings and getting this through the legislature was this. People said, well, all of the medical professional organizations endorse this. How can you go against what they're saying? So I'd like to start with that. Let's drill down, if we could, into how did the medical establishment somehow endorse this idea and get on board with this idea that children should determine their own gender, and we should just go along with that.
I just want to start by thanking you for having me, for congratulating you on the fine work that you've done in Kentucky. I'm so pleased to hear that the children there are protected against gender ideology, protected against telling them that they might be born in the wrong body, that they may need to, quote unquote, align their bodies with their minds, you know, by using drugs and surgeries. So I'm very pleased to hear that, you know, of the part that you played in that for the kids in Kentucky. I wish that was the case for the entire country. I've been writing and speaking about this issue for many, many years, Richard. I first became aware that kids were being indoctrinated with this with these dangerous ideas all the way back in 2008. And I wrote a book at that time about sex education called You're Teaching My Child What? And one of the chapters there was on gender. So you have asked how these ideas have infiltrated our medical organizations, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Endocrine Society, those are the doctors, of course, that prescribe hormones, the American Psychiatric Association. And the way that that has happened over the years is that groups of activists with a clear agenda about changing our culture, changing society, and also with an agenda to help you know, and have compassion for those extremely, extremely rare individuals. I'm talking one in tens of thousands of people, it used to be, individuals that for some reason felt an intense discomfort with their sex. Now, what happened is that these activists who were doctors within the medical organizations, they were on and are on the committees that are charged with the responsibility of looking at this issue and studying it and coming up with suggestions for policy. So, you know, this is how things happen within these organizations. You can't have every doctor doing their own research on a given subject. You're going to depend on the professional organization to do the research, to do the, you know, whatever debate needs to happen, whatever discussion needs to happen on an issue, and then come up with some sort of guidance for the individual doctors. I mean, when you take your child to the pediatrician or to a therapist, you know, that pediatrician and therapist, they're very busy people. They're going to depend in general, they're going to trust what their professional organization tells them to do. So in my case, that would be the American Psychiatric Association, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. If you're a pediatrician, it's going to be the American Academy of Pediatrics, and so on and so forth. Now, what's happened is that those professional organizations, and they are eminent organizations, they were always, you know, respected worldwide. And we turn to their organizations, to those organizations for information and guidance. But those organizations, at least in this area of gender medicine, have been captured, have been taken over by activists. And they join these small committees or work groups of maybe 8 or 10 or 12 clinicians, and they look at the subject and they come up with their guidelines. And then the way it works is that those guidelines have to be approved by the board of the directors of the professional organization. And what's happened is that these committees are made up of a majority of radicalized activists who have a certain endpoint in mind. And they do not consider all the up-to-date research and data that exists on this issue. They basically push through what they want. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2018 published their policy. It was on this issue of the treatment of gender, transgender identifying kids, or what they call gender diverse kids, which actually, you know, your audience should understand that what that really means is just, it's about personality. It's not about sex and being male or female. It's about personality. There are boys that have more feminine interests and maybe more feminine kind of presentation or behavior. And there's girls that have more stereotypically masculine stereotypes that, by the way, we have been fighting for decades to get away from. And now we're forced back to those stereotypes. But what I'm saying is that those committees have an agenda. And the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2018 came out with a policy statement which hook, line, and sinker agreed with this prevailing ideological view that says kids know best who they are in terms of whether they're boys or girls. It doesn't matter how old they are. It doesn't matter what comorbid, coexisting psychiatric illnesses they may have. They may be on the autism spectrum or suffering from depression, anxiety, trauma, schizophrenia. It doesn't matter. the child is in the driver's seat. The clinician must rubber stamp the child's diagnosis. This is the foundation. This is the premise of what's called gender affirming care. This gender affirming care, which is an Orwellian term, because it requires us to affirm a child's belief that is not based in reality.
Very good. Dr. Grossman, going back to the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is probably the most influential professional medical organization that would speak to child well-being and best practices for children. You mentioned that they affirmed or adopted gender affirmation of minors, gender affirmation care, in 2018, but they did it without any evidence, nor did they do this without any of the rank and file members voting on it. Has this ever happened before? This was a major policy shift that the American Academy of Pediatrics pursued. Has this ever happened before where they adopted something without evidence? It was controversial at the time, but it was just pushed through, as you mentioned, by committees, by activists who served on these committees. They set the agenda. They presented this to the body, but there was no evidence for it.
Well, they presented it to the board of directors. They did not present it to the body. They did not present it to the rank and file, you know, pediatrician. They did not allow for debate. They squashed the debate, and they're still squashing it.
Now, this misrepresents the, really, there are a lot of people, a lot of pediatricians who are clearly opposed to this. I mean, doesn't this kind of political maneuver, which it was a political maneuver, it was not based on science or best practices, doesn't this split an organization like this, a once very respectable, trustworthy organization? What's happening because of this move? Are you aware of any of the fallout associated with this?
Well, for one thing, you know, there were a group of pediatricians that actually 20 years ago, because the American Academy of Pediatrics was so politicized, even back then, on issues such as abortion, contraception for teenagers without the parental knowledge, that a group of pediatricians, including an ex-president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, I discuss this in my book, they split off and they formed the American College of Pediatricians. And so that's a group that your listener, your audience need to know about. And their website is acpeds.org. So there has already been a split in that organization. And I believe that there would be more of a split if more pediatricians were aware of, of basically what I write about in my book, which is that gender affirming care is based on one small and very problematic study that came out of Holland on children, a small study of 55 kids. I can't go into all the details. If you've read most of my book, you've probably already read about this. It's called the Dutch Protocol. And this one study that was done, I will explain this. It was a study that included only kids who had severe gender dysphoria, severe discomfort with their sex from an early age. And they also could not have any significant mental health issues. So the people in Holland, the researchers that undertook this study, were very, very careful about who to include, those 55 kids. And only if they met those criteria did they go on to get puberty blockers, which was the first time puberty blockers were ever used in physically healthy kids. I want to underscore, these kids are physically healthy in every way. And those kids were given blockers. And then a few years later, they were given cross-sex hormones, estrogen and testosterone. And then a few years after that, if they desired, they were also given surgeries. So the thing is that the results, they followed those kids for just a year and a half, not a long time. You really need to follow subjects in a study like this, in which the kids are ending up, many of them, being sterilized. You need to follow them for a good long time.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. If you are just tuning in, I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Marian Grossman, and you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. We're talking about radical gender ideology and gender transition of minors. Dr. Grossman, many European nations are moving away from so-called gender-affirming care, and it's because what they are discovering, puberty blockers and hormone therapy, is causing to the very young bodies of these children. You had mentioned a case, and I believe it was Sweden, a young girl who was given puberty blockers at the age of 11. And by the age 15, she had severe osteoporosis. She had breakdown in her vertebra. Her body was wrecked, for lack of a better term. And that created a public outcry. And that's one example. There have been other examples where these high-dose hormones have damaged young people's bodies. And so we see European nations responding. Great Britain, France, Sweden, Finland, Norway, they are halting their aggressive, at one time it was an aggressive pursuit of gender-affirming care. And it's based on studies, it's based on the medical evidence, or looking at what these drugs have done to kids. My question to you is, are we close behind? Are we going to see the brakes put on so-called gender affirmation and gender affirming care here in this nation?
I certainly hope so. And I believe we're certainly moving in that direction. And I can tell that you have read the book carefully. That case in Sweden of a girl, she went by the name of Leo. Her skeleton was damaged from being on puberty blockers. Her parents were not told of this possibility. And it was because of this case of Leo and what happened to Leo that the medical authorities in Sweden undertook an investigation of the gender-affirming care. And, the hospital actually issued an apology. The hospital where this happened in Stockholm admitted that they had done wrong and issued an apology to that family and other families that were also affected. And the medical authorities in Sweden looked at the evidence, which of course is worldwide evidence. The evidence from Sweden is no different from the evidence that we have here. That's a good thing about medicine, that, there's no difference between, treating the kids in Kentucky and treating the kids in California and New York. The medicine is the same. The effects of these medical interventions are the same. And so it's because of what happened in Sweden with Leo, with that girl and others, that they pivoted away from gender-affirming care. And now they will only permit a very, very select, carefully chosen few kids who will be in clinical trials. So they're going to choose these kids very carefully, and they will be watched very carefully as part of a research project. Now, compare that with what's going on here, where in some states, minors can walk into Planned Parenthood and get these medications in 30 minutes.
Very good. Dr. Grossman, I want to refer to something in your book, Lost in Translation. In the very beginning, you dedicate this book to literally hundreds of people, parents, minors, others who have suffered from this gender identity craze that we're in. And as I was reading through, looking at some of the people that you dedicated this to, it really struck me that this is not a theoretical issue. This is not something that's being debated in academia or that somebody wrote a paper on. This gender ideology has affected real people. This gender transition of minors has hurt real people. This idea that children should determine their own gender and parents don't have any say, it's affected real people, hasn't it? Is that what's moved you to write this book?
Yeah, you know, Richard, I my practice is dedicated to these families. And I dedicated the book to the parents of these kids because the trauma that they have experienced and continue to experience because of this political social crusade that has successfully captured my profession and so many other parts of our society, it destroys individuals, it destroys marriages, it destroys families. There's a ripple effect. Okay, it's not just, of course, we have to be concerned about the child. Obviously, we're focused on the child, but we need to also be thinking about the effect on parents, grandparents, siblings, the entire community.
Very good. Dr. Grossman, I know we're running out of time here. What do you recommend for parents of gender distressed children? You do share stories of parents who want what's best for their children, who are trying to get them help, and yet these children go to their public school, and these public schools are secretly, at least there's one example, maybe more in here, of children being secretly transitioned or socially transitioned, if you will, by their schools. What recommendations do you have in that specific circumstance? There's a family, parents who are trying to steer their kids towards their biological sex. What pointers do you have for them?
There's a lot of things that parents can do. Now, first of all, parents need to be informed so that they can understand what this entire issue is about. Otherwise, it's very confusing. You know, the terms, all these new terms that a lot of people have never heard before, cisgender, pangender, you know, there's a whole new language that is weaponized against the parents. So they have to understand that. They have to understand the history. But they also have to know they're not alone and they don't have to go through this alone. A lot of parents, I've talked to hundreds of parents, and one of the hardest things is feeling isolated. It seems like the entire culture is against you. Your neighbors, your in-laws, your brothers and sisters, the teachers and guidance counselor, it can feel like you're so isolated, but that's not necessary. There are thousands and thousands of parents that have kids that are going through this, and they are dealing with the same challenges. So I want parents to be aware that there are all kinds of groups and support groups. There are associations that exist in order to support the parents, and they can get to all of that on my website on the resources tab. Now, In terms of the child, you're going to be walking a tightrope. That tightrope is between being loving and supportive, but also holding on to reality. So, you know, you're not going to sacrifice the reality of your child being a boy or a girl, but you do want to remain. And in the beginning, you know, you want to be curious. and you want to give your child an opportunity to talk. What is this all about? You know, why is it, what is it like for them? Where did they learn about it? And I provide in my book, I don't know if you got to that point yet, because it's toward the end. I provide a model conversation that a parent can have with their child on this issue, and how the parent can remain loving and attentive and yet, you know, stay in reality and not give in to the kid's demands, immediate demands for a new name, new pronouns, and puberty blockers and hormones. Now, it's not an easy thing to do, but it can be done. You also, very important, you want to get control of your child's internet use. And I have an appendix written by an IT expert on how to do that. You have to know where your kid is going online, what websites they're going to, and who they are talking to. The internet is filled with groomers who are more than eager to reach your innocent child. So you have to get control of your child's internet use. You have to put your school on notice. You have to let them know, and there's a form that you can print out from my website. All of that is available for free on the website. There's a form written by attorneys that put the school on notice. Your family does not permit your child to be exposed to gender ideology. You do not permit your child to be socially transitioned, what you mentioned before, Richard, which is the adoption of a new name and pronouns at school, permitting the child to use the opposite sex bathroom, changing rooms, and so on. Your family, the parents do not permit that, and you will hold the school responsible for any damage that comes about as a result. So those are just a few of the many things that parents can do.
Dr. Grossman, this has been just great to meet you and to talk with you, and appreciate all that you're doing. God bless you, and you keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Richard. I'm going to say one last thing, and that is that the book is not written for professionals. It's written for regular moms and dads. It's very readable. And also, I don't want parents to wait until they're facing this catastrophe.